Major League Baseball is back. The Yankees and the Nationals got it all started on Thursday night, but not before we got a dose of reality with the news that Nat slugger Juan Soto tested positive for coronavirus.
Just over the first day of baseball, we've already seen how tricky it is to really navigate through this.
That is Britt Jaroli. She's the Nationals beat writer for The Athletic. She's our guest today, along with Lindsay Adler, who covers the Yankees. Both writers were at the game Thursday night. I'm Seth Davis from The Athletic, and this is The Comeback, COVID-19, and the Return of Sports. We'll get to Britt and Lindsay in a moment, but first, let's update you on what's happening around the world of sports. In basketball, we're getting our first look at what NBA games look like inside the Orlando bubble. Scrimmages have been underway for all 22 teams. Things look different, to say the least. Players have been spaced out 6 feet apart on the bench, and instead of fans sitting behind them, we've got large video screens which display different messages. The first games that actually count begin next Thursday. In football, the NFL and its Players Association continue to hammer out the details on financials and health, with training camps scheduled to begin in about a week. There's a lot to work out on the money side. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that league revenues are expected to drop by $4 billion this year. That revenue decline could potentially have an impact on next year's salary cap. And now to baseball. The Toronto Blue Jays have found a home for this shortened season. The team was barred by the Canadian government from playing in its hometown, so the Jays are shuffling off to Buffalo. Major League Baseball began its season officially on Thursday night in Washington, D.C., where the Nationals raised their World Series banner and then lost to the New York Yankees in a rain-shortened game. The Athletic had two writers on the scene, Britt Jaroli and Lindsay Adler. Both of them join us today for a discussion on what happened and what happens next. Britt and Lindsay, thanks for being at the pod. You were both at Nationals Park on Thursday night for the highly unusual season opener. And of course, the news was already breaking throughout the day, even before the game started. We learned beforehand about the positive test for Juan Soto. Britt, tell us how that broke down as far as how you found out. And you've reported that he had two follow-up tests that were negative. So does that indicate that maybe it was a false positive? And does that mean that he could possibly play their next game against the Yankees on Saturday?
Yeah, so there's obviously a lot of moving parts. And right before the roster was announced, the news broke that Juan Soto had COVID-19. This is particularly unfortunate because he was already quarantined for 14 days because pre-existing DC law that has since been amended to not include the Nationals mandates anyone exposed to COVID, someone who has COVID-19, whether they are sick or have symptoms or not, has to go through a two-week quarantine. So Juan Soto had just gotten back to the field a few days before opening day. Now they're in a situation where he did get those two rapid tests. He did get another test that they're waiting on the results for, and they should have later today. The issue, of course, is the reliability factor. The rapid tests are not nearly as reliable as the tests that the players are doing on that every other day basis that are going out to those two labs, the one in Salt Lake City and the one in New Jersey at Rutgers University. So the way it's going right now, and Ken Rosenthal at the Athletic detailed it a little bit today, is there's not really a protocol in place for these false positives. So teams are having to wait until they test again on that 48-hour test negative twice in a matter of several days. Well, in the case of Juan Soto, he could miss the entire opening series and not be sick. And you saw it earlier as well with the Braves losing both their catchers who have COVID symptoms but have tested negative. So I think what's going to have to happen here, and the Nationals are certainly going to continue to test Soto and try to appeal the process, is MLB is going to have to look at these tests, and this is similar to what's going on in the country as well, and say what is reliable, what is safe, what can we trust, and how can we avoid a situation where stars could have false positives and it could have a real detrimental effect on the on-field product. You know, you're trying to keep people healthy, and safety is obviously going to be paramount this season, but you cannot have a situation where guys who are not sick are missing multiple games, and that could be the situation here.
So, Brett, this is obviously something that Major League Baseball has prepared for, these positive tests. And the issue isn't just the person testing positive, but all the other players on the team in the locker room who may have also been exposed. So explain for us, if you would, what are the protocols when something like this happens? And to the degree that you can tell, were they followed?
Yeah. So if Juan Soto is in fact positive and these follow-up tests are the ones that are wrong, it's a little more scary because he got tested on Sunday. He's been tested four times prior to this, according to the every other day schedule that all the players and staff and tier one individuals are on. Tuesday was the test that was positive. Now, Tuesday night, he played in a game in Baltimore against the Orioles. So you're now looking at possibly infecting another team. You know, the team has said that Soto did not enter what the CDC defines as kind of close contact with anyone. But if you look at that, it's hard to believe that that's not the case. The CDC defines close contact as anyone within 6 feet for more than 15 minutes. So certainly, I think when teams are evaluating that, it would be very hard to say that Juan Soto was not in close contact with anyone playing in a game. So that right there kind of makes you uneasy. And it really illustrates a lot of the panic that happened when the positive test initially came out yesterday afternoon is, okay, he's now had this for 48 hours. He's been spreading the virus potentially if he is in fact positive. And there's really no way to stop that. So with MLB, he has to have those back-to-back negative tests. Although there's now a loophole, which I referenced earlier with Ken Rosenthal, if a player is continuing to test negative on follow-up tests, there is a case where they can bring it to kind of a court, MLB mandated group, and they can say, if they can say unequivocally, hey, this guy is not contagious. He does not actively have the virus. He is tested negative this many times. We don't need to wait for another test. There is a chance that he would not have to wait for those two negative tests that are supposed to be a day separated from each other. There is a chance he could get back on the field earlier. So this is all kind of a living document. And I'm certain Lindsay and really every other team can kind of tell you that it's super confusing. You're starting trying to learn here on the fly. I did not sign up to be an infectious disease expert, but I feel like I'm slowly at least reading and trying my best to educate myself on what's going on. This is going to be something the league's going to have to continue to adapt and adjust to. And just over the first day of baseball, we've already seen how tricky it is to really navigate through this.
Yeah, we're all amateur epidemiologists right now. We're all expertizing ourselves, if that's a word. Lindsay, it was a big night for the Yankees. Gerrit Cole, their shiny new toy, took the mound. Everyone waiting for that moment. As the road team, of course, they had a different set of circumstances in terms of travel and lodging and isolating themselves to whatever degree they can. So what's it like for the road team trying to compete in this environment?
So the Yankees wound up taking an Amtrak down, which Gerrit Cole said it was his second time taking Amtrak, and he really enjoyed it. So they took Amtrak down, and they have kits that they can use to sanitize their hotel rooms and things like that. I think it's just a different allocation of space. You know, I believe that the Yankees are having their post-game meals back at their hotel because it's, you know, it's a concern at the ballpark. So I think it's just kind of an adaptation, but so far after one trip, one game, they seem to be doing okay with it.
So both of you were at the game on Thursday night. Definitely new for you guys as well. Must've been a surreal feeling. I'd love to hear from both of you. Lindsay, why don't you start? What was it like being there?
It was pregame was very weird, you know, because I'm sure Britt, you know, has a lot of feelings on. It's really not what you want to watch a World Series ceremony while there's no one there to applaud them and kind of join in the fun. And so it's just, you know, the eerie quiet is just not what you're used to or really looking for on opening day. But, you know, after I would say an inning and a half, it was kind of easy just to kind of settle in and just have the same, you know, fall into the same patterns that I usually have with watching baseball. You know, the big thing to me was that in the top of the sixth inning, an enormous storm started rolling in and we couldn't close the press box windows because otherwise we would have been out of compliance with the protocol. But I think everyone and their laptop survived that one.
What was interesting is I was at the Orioles-White Sox game 5 years ago in 2015 when they had no fans, and it was due obviously to the kind of unrest in the city of Baltimore. I lived in Baltimore at the time over everything that was going on with Freddie Gray, and that game was worse, I think, in a lot of ways because they didn't have any sound at all. last night they had some like fake crowd noise. They had the music, they had the PA announcer. It seemed like they were trying really hard to create some kind of atmosphere. You know, and you could hear at times, you know, guys clapping or things going on. But when we were at Camden Yards, I mean, you could hear guys talking to each other in the on deck circle. There were players telling us in the press box, like, hey, guys, be quiet. So this wasn't nearly as bad as that. It certainly isn't a normal game, right? There's nothing normal about it. It still kind of has that spring training feel. But I think all things considered, with what they're working with, they kind of did the best they can. To me, the weirdest part of all of this is, like Lindsay said, the pregame, but also just like the postgame as well, just talking to guys over Zoom. And I did a radio call earlier and they were asking me about the mood in the clubhouse. And I had to correct them and say, we are not allowed in the clubhouse. We cannot leave the press box. I think that's the, even weirder than watching the nine innings with no fans. It's not having any access to the players, not having really any ability to talk to people about what's going on and really have the pulse of the team. It just feels like you're a fan up there in the stands with really no particular insight at all.
Well, to your point, Britt, I mean, Lindsay, you recently wrote that, you know, one of the things that you're going to have to consider, I'm sure both of you will, is, you know, what's the value of actually being at the ballpark? You could do your job pretty much from home because you're conducting your media interviews through Zoom. Lindsay, what's going to be the calculation moving forward? Do you anticipate being at all 60 games?
No, definitely not. I'm definitely not traveling anywhere that requires me to get on a plane. Honestly, even the ones within driving distance, I'm not quite sure, you know, how I will handle those. I think, you know, for something like Philly, that makes it easy to kind of do a long day, but a day trip. If, you know, I think Garrett Cole is scheduled to pitch, I believe, Tuesday there. So I'll probably do something like that. But the thing I'm curious about is, even though it's only a really 2-month regular season, I think at some point it'll just start to kind of hit the, like, you know, midsummer lull. It's one thing to sit in the park for opening day where even if there's no one else in the ballpark, there's still that buzz and that excitement. But I'm curious to see in a couple weeks, and especially when the Yankees are playing non-competitive teams, I'm very curious to see whether or not I really am able to get anything out of it. And the thing is, I just want to be responsible, not just to myself, but I just don't want to be recklessly, you know, leaving my apartment if I really don't need to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not doing all 60 either. And to be honest with you, yesterday was my first day at the park. I eloped on Sunday and kind of didn't want to take any unnecessary risk being around people. So I didn't do any of the summer camp practices. I covered them over Zoom. And I never once felt like, gee, I'm missing access or I'm missing news not being there. I agree with Lindsay. There's definitely like a buzz around opening day a little bit. But also the thing that kind of plays into it too is at Nats Park, the press box is 4 floors up. You really are, if you're watching the game, even live, you're really relying a lot on the TVs. For example, San Francisco or Camden Yards, you are really low. You're low enough that you are watching that game live because it's just as good. You might be going to the TVs for replays or things like that, but you can see in the dugouts, you can really kind of canvas what's going on. And you cannot do that at Nats Park unless you want to watch the whole game with binoculars. And that's true for a lot of cities. So I think that also plays into, okay, can I actually benefit from going? Can I provide the reader with something extra by going? And I think that's going to really be on a case-by-case basis, depending on who they're playing, what the situation is, and what the stadium is.
So there was also some interesting news during the pregame ceremony last night. All the players and coaches from both teams knelt before the national anthem and then stood when the anthem was played. Lindsay, how did that go over, and what do you know about how that came about?
So there were a lot of discussions, you know, throughout the league, throughout teams, with Major League Baseball, with the Major League Baseball Players Association, really leading up to this. This was kind of the brainchild of Andrew McCutchen, and it was a demonstration where they, you know, both teams held the same long piece of black fabric because they can't link arms or, you know, stand connected and in unity in any physical sense. And so he really wanted to have something about unity because he understands that it's not just that, you know, the Black American players are dealing with civil rights issues where, you know, he plays around Venezuelans, he plays around Cubans. He understands that there's a lot of people in the game who are dealing with their own injustices. So that was kind of the thinking behind it. And so after they do the voiceover script from Morgan Freeman, it's supposed to be, I think, a 6-second moment of silence before the national anthem. And the Yankees decided that they wanted to kneel as a team during that moment of silence before the national anthem. So they requested through the Nationals that they extend the moment of silence by a full minute. So the Yankees chose to kneel then and then stand together during the national anthem. And it was just, you know, I think it was pretty clear heading into it that the Yankees were going to do something where it was, you know, everyone doing something together. So that's kind of how it came about on their side.
So let's end with this. I'll ask each of you in the coming days, coming weeks, what are the major storylines that we should be following, mostly in terms of how things are going with respect to the virus and whether or not we'll be able to complete this season? Britt, let's start with you. What's the sort of next either hurdle or line of demarcation or event or whatever we should be looking for in the near future to see if this thing's actually going to work?
Yeah, well, I think Soto is the obvious one, right? Like getting him back, finding out what the deal is with him. Is he sick? Is he not sick? That's going to be really important for them. And, you know, this is a team that lost their best hitter in Anthony Rendon, who in free agency signed with the Angels. So all year long, it's kind of going to be, can they repeat? You know, can they withstand that loss? And Juan Soto is going to be a big part of their offense moving forward. So that's really the big issue, I think, right now. Obviously set against the larger backdrop of, can they be the first team in, you know, more than 3 decades out of the NL to repeat again, even though, you know, you can kind of debate all day long the whether the 60-game season counts as much as a regular season would or not. That's really what the Nationals are trying to do and trying to accomplish, and it starts with Soto.
Lindsay, what about you in terms of Major League Baseball as a whole and whether or not we're actually going to have a season? What are you going to be looking for in the coming days and weeks?
It's just the health element. You know, it's actually difficult for me to write about this because it's difficult to differentiate between health when we're talking about like hamstrings and obliques and health when we're talking about coronavirus. So I think the big thing is, you know, getting everyone through intake, or, you know, most everyone through intake, and creating that kind of, you know, vacuum of safety during training camp is one thing. But now I think the thing about, you know, if Juan Soto is positive, or even just the scare of it, you know, it's really what happens when, you know, they start receiving positive cases of players who have been around their teammates, who have been on the road, who have been playing against each other. So that is really just my big concern, is really hoping that when these positive cases do pop up, that they don't really lead to significant team spread.
Well, that is certainly the hope for everybody. We've been doing this podcast now a couple of months, and this is the first time that we're talking about an actual game that counts. So thank you, Britt and Lindsay, for helping us with that. And best of luck to you guys on the road. Please be safe. And we look forward to reading your coverage on The Athletic down the road. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
My thanks to Lindsay Adler and Britt Giroli from The Athletic for joining the show. I'm Seth Davis, and this is The Comeback, presented by The Athletic. Be sure to follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you access your podcasts, as we track the major issues surrounding the return of sports. Thanks for listening, everybody.